Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to a podcast that would never put Ted Cruz to sleep. I'm just too much of a loudmouth. I am not Muzak. I am not elevator music. I'm in need of a volume knob in my neck. My coworkers have told me so. So let's look back on the Biden speech, the pseudo State of the Union. We came, we watched, we yawned. It's not surprising that Ted Cruz would head bob during this thing. Biden got almost whispery in this. He's trying so hard to be the anti-Trump that it was just kind of cartoonish. I could not believe how much he sounded like Dana Carvey's new impression that he did on Colbert.
Come on, folks, let's get real. I'm not kidding around here. You know, we got to do the thing. We did Barack. We did the deal, you know. And, my dad, you know, lost his job in Scranton. No joke. I'm not being a wise guy here. He said, Pops, why'd you lose? He said, Joe, I did. My mom said, that's the cookie, which she, that crumbles. She says, what do it? You know, and here's the deal. Number one, the thing that they said, come on. Number two, the two part. Folks, three, you know, come on. I'm not kidding around. No rocket science. Here's the deal. Come on now. Now that he told, he knew it floated. He told Bob Woodward, Joanne Woodward. He told Bob Redford. Excuse me. But folks, I care a lot. People are suffering, and I do. And my mother said, you know, that's the way the cookie is. And it goes those places. And you know, we can do this. Shots. We can, in fact, and do better than we did before.
So. The ratings were terrible, just under 27 million, the worst rating in 28 years. That's including the cable networks. These days, the networks got 11.6 million, and it was 27 million when you added the cable, because that's really where a lot of people go now. They go to their cable news channels. You know, Trump gave a State of the Union. Fox News is going to have a big share of the audience under that. You know, Trump's first State of the Union in 2017 got 48 million. Biden now got 27 million. And so in the latest Brian Stelter newsletter, they buried this bad news under, for the record, part three. You actually have to click the read more link in the email to get down to this bad news. It's right below the click here for more link. Stelter tried to make excuses. The decline probably had more to do with the state of TV than the state of the presidency. Sagging rates for award shows like the Emmys and the Oscars have underscored live TV's declines. And then there's more spin. But it's easy to see Wednesday's ratings as a reflection of Biden's deliberately low-key presidency, too. A sharp break from the drama and deceit of the Trump years. When you lose, when you have half of Trump's rating, you say it's because Trump's a liar. Stelter then quotes Democrat typer Susan Glasser of The New Yorker. Being the un-Trump means Biden has already accomplished the first and most important promise of his presidency. This is really the line about Biden I think is the absolute lamest. How hard is it to be the un-Trump? Any of the 15 or 16 people who ran against Trump in 2016 could be the un-Trump. Any Democrat who ran in the last cycle. How many of theirs? There are like 37, you know. They could all be the un-Trump. It is not hard to be the un-Trump. To call it an accomplishment is ridiculous. Now, surely there's something to the fact that people didn't tune into this because it's like the Oscars and the Emmys or whatever, that because it's dull. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Despite the fact that, like, every member of Congress is vaccinated, they still did this social distancing thing. It looked like they had about 200 people in there. So there's none of the drama there in that. Everybody's wearing masks despite their being double vaccinated. Kamala and Nancy Pelosi are behind Biden in masks. And frankly, that's depressing. That's the way I feel about it. When are we going to get out of this idea that we're going to get vaccinated twice and you're still going to have to wear a mask everywhere? So that's one reason not to tune in. And then it's this whole idea that Biden's going to give this speech and just kind of whisper it. I mean, I actually didn't watch the speech. I decided, because of what I was doing and I was looking at Twitter, I put it in my headphones. So I probably got an exaggerated sense of the whole, yeah, we got a kind of a COVID policy, guys. You know, it was weird. It was weird and whispery. But of course, they want to make that sound like a great thing. You know, John Avlon at CNN, this is Stelter quoting all of the CNN suck-ups. It's a more intimate fireside chat style. Or then there's Brian Lowry, the TV and movie critic. Biden's almost whisper was extremely effective in capturing the gravity and seriousness of what has transpired in a sober, if not somewhat somber, way. You know, it just, again, it's sort of this thing, if you're watching a show and your baseball team's getting clobbered 10-1 and you say, yes, but they're effective. They're doing it in a somewhat sober and undramatic fashion. I mean, CNN now are apple polishers. You remember, apples in the CNN ads used to represent the facts. And now they just represent a classroom full of aspiring teachers' pets. Pets that would never bite. Unlike Major. Then there's the themes, not just the sound of it, there's the themes of it. You have CNN's Van Jones came on and said, he's developing a kind of positive populism. Trump's populism was negative, racist, divisive, terrible. What they're basically saying is a socialist populism is positive. If you're pushing radicalism by whispering, that's positive populism. Stelter also promoted CNN analyst John Harwood, who said Biden's speech had plain, non-political, non-ideological language invoking the people he wants to help. There's nothing non-political in this speech. There's nothing non-ideological in this speech. He's ripping trickle-down economics. You know, he's hitting those notes about systemic racism. It's got all the Democratic Party talking points in here. The idea it's non-political or non-ideological is just false. We made this point with CNN.com as this guy named Stephen Collinson, who is, what would the word be, lickspittle? I mean, this guy was the most feverishly anti-Trump writer they had at CNN.com. And now he writes these gushy pieces about Biden. Clearly, Stephen Collinson should be paid right out of the some Democratic super PAC, but he is paid by CNN. This was the CNN Politics Twitter account promoted his latest blast with the words, President Biden to showcase his moderate radicalism in his big congressional address. What a sales job. Moderate radicalism. I've made this point. Doesn't this sound like something oxymoronic, like quiet loudness? That's a loudness I can't achieve. Collinson, the article argued, Biden's quiet radicalism is expressed through a huge pandemic rescue bill, a larger proposal that redefines the concept of infrastructure, and a massive health and child care blueprint. Those are all apparently positive populism. spending massive $6 or $8 or $9 trillion is redefining the concept of infrastructure. Yes, they've redefined the concept to be everything is infrastructure. Everything that Democrats want to fund is infrastructure. There's no such thing as quiet radicalism. I mean, I guess what they're trying to sell is the whole notion of Biden's going to whisper and he'll let the trillion-dollar spending do the talking. This is a socialist speech. This is a socialist blueprint, and nobody's going to use the word socialist to describe it because that's a Republican word. I went into our closed captioning search and put socialist in, and of course you get a lot of Fox News. But what you got with Stephen Colbert and Trevor Noah and a little bit of Claire McCaskill on the Today Show was just mocking the idea that the Democrats were pushing socialism. That's not socialism. It is socialism. They just don't like the word. Politico had a headline that said, Biden just gave the most ideologically ambitious speech of any Democratic president in generations. These are the words they use. Ideologically ambitious. I mean, obviously, Politico is disagreeing with Harwood, thinking it's somehow non-ideological. He's saying it's the most ideologically and ambitious speech. Apparently just puts Obama and Obamacare to shame. They won't use the S word. They won't call things socialist, even if they're being loved by Bernie Sanders, even if AOC is delighted at the progress. They use words like bold and ambitious. Bill D'Agostino, our video whiz, has a mashup of them constantly saying bold. Bold and ambitious. They use these phrases like go big or go home. Now, if Trump has a big tax cut, I don't think that was the term that they were going to use. Go big or go home. You know, it's always a massively risky redistribution of money to the rich or something. You know, it's always going to be categorized as a terrible, terrible thing. But the Stephen Collinsons of the world want to try to make you think that Biden is this classic Democrat centrist. He's been in Washington for 50 years, so he can't be a socialist. Or he's old and white, so he's not a socialist. It's like they haven't paid any attention to Bernie Sanders whatsoever. Yeah, Collinson was like, as a white elderly man, Biden's a difficult target for Trump-loving conservatives. I mean, would Stephen Collinson write this thing if we actually had President Bernie? It's sort of hard to describe Bernie Sanders as a socialist. Ted Cruz described Biden's approach as boring but radical. And maybe that's the whole strategy. One of Cruz's advisors tweeted out Collinson's essay with CNN video next to it with these words, Ocasio-Cortez, colon, Biden exceeding expectations of progressives. Yeah. Also known as Biden thrilling socialists. NBC reporter Sahil Kapoor was on MSNBC after the speech in the midnight hour, and he said that this was a Biden superpower. He makes massive multi-trillion dollar FDR-sized liberal policy sound moderate and middle of the road. No, it's the media that wants to tell you, oh, Biden has a superpower. No, Biden has a Democratic press that tries to sell everything he's doing. I mean, just listen to the sound of this. It's like, you know, he makes war sound like peace. Does that sound like that would make sense? He makes riots sound like romper room. No, what Biden's rhetorical style is completely separate from Biden's governing agenda. And they shouldn't be trying to put one over on us by somehow suggesting if he whispers through a speech it ain't socialism. This is the way they do things, though. It's go big or go home week at the Today Show. And it's all misleading, and it's all salesmanship. And these people say they're in the news business. I'll be back to discuss the Tim Scott half of this after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
So the Republicans chose Senator Tim Scott to give the party's response to Biden's pseudo-State of the Union. This just makes it a little harder to suggest the grand old party is deeply racist. It's kind of funny for them then to sort of spin that there's only one black Republican senator. Well, there's only two black Democrat senators. Raphael Warnock just got elected, and Cory Booker. Kamala Harris, of course, got a promotion. And they replaced her with a Hispanic. This is the funny thing about the Democrats. Do you know this? Now, the Congressional Black Caucus has more than 55-plus members. No Republicans in it. It's the Congressional Black Democrat Caucus. They just don't call it that. If we have a systemically racist country, how come we have like 60 black members of Congress? This is always one of the hard questions you have to ask. By the way, we have two black Republicans in the House, and they're both freshmen. Burgess Owens of Utah, the former pro football player, and Byron Donalds of Florida. We did have Will Hurd of Texas, but he retired before this last election. It is always a tough thing to be a black Republican, whether it's a black Republican in Congress or a black Republican anywhere in the United States, or a black federal judge or Supreme Court justice. Ask Clarence Thomas how Democrats treat black conservatives. They're vicious. They would prefer, I mean, I think this is quite obvious, the Democrats would prefer the Republicans to be all white. That's the way they want them. You know, George W. Bush ended up nominating two white guys to the Supreme Court because that was a safer strategy. You could see what happened when they nominated Clarence Thomas. They were all upset at the idea that they would nominate Miguel Estrada as the first Hispanic Supreme Court justice. So his lower court nomination sat around so long that Estrada just dropped out. They don't like black Republicans. Tim Scott did make the central argument against Biden that it's preposterous that he's trying to unite the country. You don't call Republicans worse than Jim Crow. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. What an idiot. That's just a terrible, terrible thing to say. And the fact checkers were fine with it. The independent fact checkers. That's not uniting people. And you don't suggest America is still deeply and systemically racist and say, well, that's a comforting message. That doesn't alienate people. Let's just focus on the one clip of Tim Scott played by CNN on New Day the next day.
Today, kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all. By doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country.
CNN's John Harwood said it was smart for Republicans to pick Scott. But then the big butt was coming. You know, Scott's problem was he was channeling the Republican Party view that it's white people who are being discriminated against.
Tim Scott, African-American senator from South Carolina,
was making the case that, yes, I understand what racism feels like. I understand what discrimination feels like. But then pivot to the argument that is pretty widespread within the Republican Party right now, that it's white people who are being discriminated against. So he's saying kids are being taught, if you're white, you're an oppressor. He didn't say white, but that's what he meant. And that is an argument that many Republicans believe. But when you look at the context of American society and the history of America as we've evolved to this point, that's a pretty hard argument to sustain that it's really white people who are the victims here.
It's not hard to sustain that white children in some school districts are being taught that they're oppressors, that they should be ashamed of themselves, that no matter what they've done. And it's not hard to sustain that people are getting rich by claiming that your denial that you're racist only proves that you're racist. He didn't say Robin DiAngelo and Ibram X. Kendi, etc., but that's what he was talking about. What an amazing piece of logic. Denying you're racist only proves that you're racist. You know, we can't exactly turn that around on Ibram X. Kendi. It's not meant to be used. It's only meant to be used on one race. And it's not hard to deny when Scott says, it's these people are trying to suggest we've made zero progress in America on race. On The View, Joy Behar said Tim Scott didn't seem to understand the difference between a racist country and systemic racism. She complained that he said he was the object of discrimination, and then he says this is not a racist country. There is such a thing as both. You can have an individual episode of discrimination, or several or many individual episodes of discrimination. It doesn't mean the entire country is racist. There's almost nobody who's an elected Republican who would try to suggest America has a spotless history of racial equality. That's just nuts. But what the systemic racism pushers want is to extend the guilt for that history ever forward. So we all have to pay $10 trillion in reparations for slavery that ended more than 150 years ago. And no one's allowed to say, hey, if I'm 25, why am I responsible? And yes, obviously slavery was followed by segregation, but even in that case, we had all the civil rights legislation of the 1960s, which they have such great reverence for. How does that not matter? And how is it you're going to try to suggest we have a racist country when we elected Barack Obama twice? And they just don't understand the whole idea of calling this a racist country is an insult. They all ran around with their hair on fire at the idea that Trump was heard saying in a meeting that certain third world countries were s-hole countries. They all got upset about that. How dare you say that El Salvador is a terrible place to live? Well, if it's not a terrible place to live, why are they coming in droves? That was kind of the point that Trump was making. And it was a point that all of these ultra-sympathetic stories on illegal aliens would say, it was a rough time there in Guatemala. They had to get out. Well, then what kind of country was it? Wouldn't you obviously suggest it's an inferior nation compared to the United States? This is where you just want to say to these people, if you hate America so much, you know, love it or leave it. Now, you don't have to love it to stay, but you could leave it if you hate it. You know, the thing that upsets me about all of this is that, you know, I came up in the 1980s. I got really interested in politics in the 80s. I came to Washington fresh out of college in 1986. And our heroes were, we'd watch C-SPAN because we had no Fox News. You know, your Republican TV was catching Pat Buchanan on Crossfire and CNN and watching the Republicans in Congress on C-SPAN. And our heroes were guys like Jack Kemp and Newt Gingrich and Robert Walker. Nobody remembers Robert Walker so much, but he was a firecracker. And these were people that were trying to push the whole idea that the Republicans needed to go out there and compete for the black vote. That the Republican Party had a message that could resonate in all the races. That the Republican Party cared about the inner city and wanted to bring enterprise to it. And the media had no interest in that whatsoever. The media didn't want that to succeed. They certainly didn't want Dole Kemp to beat Bill Clinton. They were always interested in Republican defeat. So it's always interesting when the Democrat media tells the Republicans how they should run their elections. And the reality is they want them to lose and are going to do everything they can to make them lose. And yes, you should have a multiracial appeal just because it's the right thing to do. And because that's the America we should believe in. It's multiracial. And that, you know, we all recognize the humanity of each other. That sounds great. That's not what the Democratic Party is today. It's certainly not what the media is today. The left and the media and the Democratic Party are deeply invested in racial division and hatred. Why do you think they love Maxine Waters? Why are they promoting Ilhan Omar? These are not unifiers. Why are the media so not tough on Farrakhan? Why would the media accept rioting and looting and use poetic words for it like it's a reckoning? They're suggesting, I mean, NPR did a whole thing promoting the book In Defense of Looting. So don't come to us and say, you know, the news media, they're right there with Biden trying to suggest the country should be united after Trump. I think it's really fair to say that they're not interested in unity. Civility in politics begins with the whole idea that I'm going to look at the other side and not try to deny their humanity and not try to deny their idealism, that they're coming to this from a place where they say, I'm really, my heart's really broken for the, you know, the long-term poverty of these people in the inner city. I understand that. I can listen to it and I can understand it. I just don't understand how you think the answer to that is burning down a Starbucks. And that's where, to me, that, you know, the news media, if it was really objective, if it was really all about serving the public, if it really wanted to be a referee, which they don't want to be, the first thing that they would try to encourage is some sort of unity, some sort of at least civil peace instead of civil war. How hard is it to be against looting and rioting? And yet they just can't seem to do it. And we're going to stay on this because that's what we do. Trying to look at the media and how they distort the truth and how they distort our politics and how they are not a cause for making this a more peaceful and unified country. So come read us at Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thank you for your time.